Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Thursday, February 18th, 2016. James Corbett usually joins us on a Thursday afternoon, as the program is recorded Wednesday evening, but his little boy was ill, his little baby was ill, and he was unable, because of the time change and everything, he was unable to record the program with Alfred. So you folks have us both, Alfred Addisk, good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
And myself for the full hour today. So let's get started right away. As late in the afternoon, gold started to move up in price. And a little bit of pressure on the morning, and you know, has a strong comeback. The New York spot price, we're looking up $28.30 at $12.3770. It did peak over $12.40 briefly, but $12.37 it is. Silver's up 0.22 at $15.59. Platinum is up 3 at $950. Palladium was down almost 2% at 5.06. USDX today is just barely budged, 0.01 at 96.87, and a little pressure on crude oil, 0.33 at 30.33. And we got a little information regarding, they were going to cut a little bit of production, and OPEC now has come back and said, they're just all changing their mind over there. They don't know what they're doing over there. I think it depends on, you know, the more political effects and everything on what they're going to do with oil. But we'll talk about that here in just a little bit. The paper markets today, they were little changes. The Dow reversed itself. It was up in early morning trade. Didn't hold it. You're looking at Dow down 40 points at 16,413. The NASDAQ is down 46 points at 44.87, down a little over 1%. And the S&P down 9 at 19.17. The euro is still 1.11, but a little pressure on that, 0.29. The 10-year yield is now again below 80, 1.76. I should say it's down below 1.80. It's 1.76. Both Hong Kong and Japan were up strong, 2.25%. Germany and London, was basically not a lot of change there. So, interesting day in the markets. And if the Dow can't hold any gains, I would expect to see more pressure on the European markets, here overnight. The Asian markets, you never know what they're going to do. I mean, when you, when you have Japan doing all kinds of negative rates and, you know, the Bank of Japan and, certainly, you know, China will do whatever it needs to do in order to, keep, from their currency from collapsing. In fact, China has dumped billions of American debt back in December. The largest owner of U.S. debt, China sold $18 billion of Treasury debt in December. Japan sold even more. You have other countries that are lowering their holdings of U.S. debt. You know, we have these central banks that are doing what they're needed to do to prop up their economies, to prop up their currency. You have the People's Bank of China, they're injecting cash into their financial system. So you have your central banks, they're selling U.S. treasuries, trying to prop up their collapsing currencies. And the central banks, what I found interesting, the central banks sold off a net $225 billion in U.S. Treasury debt last year, and that's the most since at least 1978. So you did have a little bit of an increase in 2014, but certainly that is not the case now. So I found that interesting, Alfred.
Well, it's all interesting, Melody. It's just it's like a bushel basket full of dots. Can you connect them? We got a bunch of dots, that's for sure, but trying to connect them sometimes is a little bit difficult.
Well, we talked a little bit about, I gave the prices of oil. Saudi Arabia, they're not prepared to cut the oil production. They said that today after the top exporter agreed with Russia to freeze output if major rivals follows. If other producers want to limit or agree to freeze in terms of additional production, that may have an impact on the market, but Saudi Arabia is not prepared to cut production. And that was told again by their foreign minister today. There were several, Venezuela, Qatar, Kuwait, they all agreed on the planned freeze, following their meeting, their talks. Even Iran had come out and possibly said, you know, they, you know, might commit, but they weren't going to, you know, commit one way or another as yet. So,
the whole thing is just in a.
It really is.
There's so much stress that they can't move. Mm-hmm. That's part of the problem here. They are. You're talking about countries, oil-producing countries, whose predominant source of income is oil.
Yeah.
And it's not only true that the price is down, but the volume is down. The demand is down. If they had stronger demand, it wouldn't be so bad. The price wouldn't be so bad for them. They could get along. But demand is down and price is down. And what are they going to do about it? Cut production? All that does is guarantee they will have even less income than they do right now. So some of these people like Saudi Arabia, I think they're just fighting for their lives. I think they're in a, I don't know, you know, survival of the fittest mode. And a number of, a large number of corporations and a significant number of oil-producing countries are going to probably wind up bankrupt or in some sort of political jeopardy over the course of the next several years. And I don't see a way around that at the moment. And what are you going to do?
Well, we've certainly seen the impact of Venezuela. I mean, what their inflation, what, 800% inflation? And you know, this all stemmed from once these oil prices started to drop since mid-2014. Prices have fallen about 70% since then. And, you know, this was all, you know.
Prices of oil.
Correct. Prices of oil have fallen since about 2014, about 70%. And certainly, you know, this was a move, you know, you kind of wonder which came first, the old OPEC producers sort of, you know, playing a little bit of, you know, let's, you know, try to, drive out competitive players, particularly the U.S. shale oil producers. And next thing you know, it just really put the world in a...
They just lost control.
They lost control.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They thought they had control, and it turns out they didn't. And now where are they? Now they're in a very difficult place, and they don't have control to get out of it. And
well,
left, you know, what are they going to do? Not easily done. They can't cut production. If they cut production, in theory, price is going to go up. All right? But if they cut production enough to make the price go up, they're still going to be selling a lower volume, and I doubt if they get a net gain. All right, we're selling more barrels of oil, and we're getting $35 a barrel, but we're not selling enough to actually improve our economy.
Well, it depends on how high the price of oil goes, but
well,
I don't think it's going to go that high, because now you're
no demand.
Now you're going to have the demand that was created by their tinkering, you know, have too much of an influence on that. So,
got an article here from Reuters. Bank of Japan launches negative rates, already dubbed a failure by markets. That's the headline. Bank of Japan's negative interest rates came into effect on Tuesday in a radical plan already deemed a failure by financial markets, highlighting Tokyo's lack of options to spur growth as global markets sputter. And that's the lesson in this stuff. The banks, they don't have any more rabbits in their hat, no more tricks up their sleeve. What can they do? And the answer is apparently nothing. The work they're doing with negative interest rates are actually an experiment. And they're just saying, well, I don't know, what do you think? We could try negative interest rates. Maybe that would work to stimulate the economy. But it doesn't, right? And here we have Bank of Japan launches negative interest rates, already dubbed a failure by markets. We can't tell for an absolute fact what's going to happen to negative interest rates a year from now. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe they're going to have some positive effect, but it doesn't look like it. It looks like the central banks, the Bank of Japan in this particular case, are grasping at straws. They're getting ready to drown, and they're grasping at straws. Maybe negative interest rates will save us. Who knows? Free toasters. Free toasters. We could give away free toasters in the banks, Melody. What do you think about that? Maybe that would get people to borrow more money and stimulate the economy. Now, the truth of the matter is nothing is working right now. And the fact that they are experimenting with negative interest rates is evidence. They don't have any more tricks. They don't have control. All by itself, we are all so used to and perhaps dependent upon a controlled economy, a central government, a central that controls the markets in a way that keeps everybody theoretically happy. When you see that control is disappearing, it's not only scary in terms of what's next. It challenges the whole system. It's not as if there's nobody up there who can say, okay, the markets are falling, and somebody can step up and say, I got this. Don't worry about it. I got this. I can handle this. No, there's nobody's got it. Nobody can handle it. There is a level of instability, and once that control is lost, what we're looking at is something like that, the fable about the emperor who was wearing invisible clothes. Until some little kid said, look, the emperor doesn't have any clothes on. And then all the people said, oh my gosh, you're right, he doesn't have any clothes on. When will they ever believe? Up until then, they believed that the emperor was beautifully, you know, he had the finest clothing in the world. In fact, he was butt naked. Once they see that he's butt naked, will they ever believe that he's properly dressed again? The central bank's loss of control is not just something to consider in terms of, oh, we have a problem right now. We have it's not just a problem, can they set interest rates? Can they do quantitative easing and inject more currency successfully into the economy? That's it. That's not it. Excuse me. The problem is we are looking at a time when the whole world is going to begin to realize the central banks may not, they may be, we may finally be seeing, oh my gosh, they're butt naked. They don't have any control. And that isn't just a temporary phenomenon. How are they going to regain the illusion that they are in control? And if they don't, what happens? Who are we going to believe in if we can't believe in Janet Yellen, Ben Bernanke, Alan Greenspan? They're there to save us and help us and do all kinds of wonderful things, and it turns out they can't. So who are we going to believe in next, Melody?
Santa?
Well, maybe Trump.
No.
Let Trump, he can don the invisible cape.
Yeah.
And see how long he can wear it. We'll watch and see. But once you get to that point where no one's in control, and you get it, I understand, central banks are not in control right now. How do they regain public confidence that they're in control? Even if they could reassert control, I don't think the public's going to believe it. I mean, if they could come up with a new economic theory, device, whatever, and they could say, ha ha, we can make the economy jump up here and do some tricks for us, I don't think the public would believe it for a year.
Well, that's why I had wanted to bring in about how these central banks are selling the U.S. debt so they can, you know, put it back into their economies. And Japan was the biggest seller. And, you know, so what does that do to, you know, the U.S. debt? So they're all beholden to themselves. And a lot of these maybe backdoor handshakes and agreements and, you know, if you do this for us, we'll do this for you. I mean, they're all falling apart. And
yeah.
I think what they're doing, that's the part of the Saudi Arabia. And, you know, yesterday you talked about the petrodollar. Well, you know, that relationship was based on the U.S. Giving defense to the Saudis. And we see these relationships are eroding. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. You know, over a longer period of time, maybe it's a good thing. I think for the immediate situation, well, maybe not so good. I don't know yet. Well, that has to be seen out. But what I do know is all the things that are going on, it just shows that the instability of the world. I mean, you could have something explode tomorrow. And I don't mean that as, I mean, you could have something major happen. We just don't even know. I mean, we can't even get to all the news to report all the news. And there's so many distractions that are going on. So, again, it shows that these central banks, you're right, Al, they've lost control. They don't know what to do. They can just keep throwing money at it to keep it to some sort of a degree of confidence. And, I mean, I was reading an article earlier today about China. You know, we don't all know that China's manufacturing they're beginning to rely on debt, people, and businesses. The government is encouraging the banks to lend to the people and to the businesses. New loans in China, they hit a record level in January of 2.5 trillion yen, yuan. That's their currency. That was about 380 billion. Doesn't seem like a lot considering all the people, but still, that's a new record level. And so, you know, with all those loans comes, again, the risk of defaults, bad loans.
Well, not just the risk, the virtual certainty of defaults.
Yes.
My understanding of the Chinese banking system and the Chinese mentality is if they can get it out of the banks, they are more interested in getting it from the banks than they are in repaying it back to the banks.
Well, bad loans.
Yeah, I know that's
jumped over 50. Bad loans jumped over 50% from January of 2014 to December 2014 to December 2015, jumped 50%.
Yeah. And that means they're going through a kind of illusion right now, as we are, but they have to. They're caught in a debt-based monetary system, same as we are. They don't have assets to back their currency, and that means they're caught. They're going through the same things we are in Japan is and Europe is. The fiat monetary system is breaking down. Let's take a break for some commercial announcements. We'll be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here on Financial Survival with co-host Melody Cedarstrom. Program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. I'm not sure. Do you have a special today, Melody?
Well, I'll bring that over at the end of the next break, but I also want to remind the listeners just to get to the website, dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. It's a great little newsletter. It'll give you all the closing prices for the week, so you can keep track of that. And I think we're going to see some strong rises in gold. I think anything below 1200 anymore, I think that's passed. Momentum is certainly building up. You know, the Wall Street Journal, the newspaper, was it Friday? I guess it was. There was all kinds of articles about gold, and then all of a sudden it changed. So when mainstream hops on the bandwagon for gold, you know, you kind of have to, you know, sit back and wonder, you know, what they're doing. But we've closed a couple times above 1200. That's what we were looking for. And we'll have to take the next leg up. So it was nice to see the good gains today. And so make sure you don't wait, folks. It can get away. And you know, Al, I'm already hearing, well, you know, gold's moved up too far. And, you know, so-and-so came out and said gold, was it J.P. Morgan or Citigroup? Not one of them said gold's going to 1,000. And it's like, you know, there's more upside potential than any downside potential.
Yeah, I know that.
And, you know,
I don't care if it goes to 500. I'm still in.
It's all
because
I don't care
you could
if it goes
spike
to
downward,
2,000.
It's still coming back up, up, up.
The price of gold, even if it's 2,000, when you have, let's remember what was going on when gold was 2,000. When it gets to 2,000 again, it's going to be far worse than what it was back in 2010, 2011. And so people will be paying 2,000. People will be jumping in at 2,000. And what are you going to do? Hold that paper? Oh, well, gold's too high at 2,000. I'm going to wait for it to fall back and take the risk. You know, you just, when you're ready to buy, you got to get in there. And, you know, when you're paying the prices that I charge my clients, I mean, there's so little commissions built into the prices of the product. I mean, you really can't go wrong. And you have to be careful of those dealers that are shown on TV. I'm working with a client right now in his IRA. I mean, they were charging them 30, 40% commissions.
Yeah.
And they were pushing the
proof
points.
It'd be cheap to pay the income tax.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
They're pushing the proof coins, and oh, it all sounds very legitimate, and you know they get you get all the glossy brochures and everything like that, and as soon as those funds were transferred to the IRA company, you know they wanted to lock them in, and the man was smart enough to say, well, what are you charging me? And they didn't want to talk about it, and that's his relative referred him to us then, and now I'm helping him. Mm-hmm. Get everything transferred from that company over to us so we can get them set up properly in his IRA. So we do that, folks. There are ways, and so give us a call at 1-800-375-4188.
Got an article here. You mentioned that someone, maybe Morgan Stanley, maybe someone else, was announcing that gold is going to fall back to $1,000 an ounce. Well, I don't know if it was Morgan Stanley that made that specific claim or not, but here is an interesting headline from ZeroHedge.com. And the headline is, Morgan Stanley admits, our advice has been horrendous, blames Bizarro World. All right? Morgan Stanley's Adam Parker openly admits that our portfolio advice has been pretty horrendous lately. For those who follow our portfolio, we did quite well over the 5 years from 2011 to 2015, but our portfolio just had its worst month in 61 months in January, and things have not improved in February. The market is down more than we thought it would be. Our biggest sector bet has been financials, particularly credit cards, doing the opposite of what we recommended would have been better. Bizarro World. Or at least, hopefully, not the real world. This is the comments coming from Morgan Stanley. They're admitting that their advice has been terrible. And they blame Bizarro World. They talk about what they refer to as Bizarro World, which I think is a spinoff from Superman comics. All right? Where everything is backwards. And they write in part, we truly find it amusing how increasingly more serious people align with our cynical view of the market. Whoops, this is Zero Hedge. This isn't Morgan Stanley. We truly find it amusing how increasingly more serious people align with our cynical view of the market, one which nothing makes sense, and merely reporting on day-to-day centrally planned events which have zero logical continuity or cause and effect. And they regard, and they define it as grounds for constant entertainment. What I look at, Morgan Stanley is coming out and just saying, look, this thing doesn't make sense anymore. And that's why they are referring to it as Bizarro World. They're complaining. Everything seems backwards. You should sell winners, buy losers, own staples in both up and down markets. Just do the opposite of what makes sense. Bizarro World. That's quote from Morgan Stanley. All right, their frustration is significant. And we've touched on this. We've speculated on this in the past. And what I suspect is that this bizarre world is Morgan Stanley's way of referring to a world spawned by fiat debt-based currency. That currency system is innately insane. And in my opinion, that insanity is finally being sensed, seen, and recognized as contagious. That, I think, is what's happening here. Now, certainly the central banks aren't going to admit that the fiat monetary system is about to collapse. And I can't tell you that it's about to collapse. I can't say it's going down the next 90 days or before the end of this year, or I don't know when it's going to happen. But I look at it, and it is irrational to believe that you can treat debt, which is nothing but a promise to pay, as an asset. Certainly not an asset of the same quality as a stack of gold coins, which you hold in your hand, and that is a payment, not a promise to pay, an actual payment. They've been trying to equate this fiat currency, debt-based currency, with assets, with tangible assets. Oh, we've got a brilliant new scheme. This thing is crazy. It's insane. It has been going on. We've been moving into it since 1933 when they pulled gold out of circulation in this country, since 1968 when they pulled silver out of circulation in this country, where they closed the door on silver circulation in this country, and 1971 when they stopped redeeming foreign-held dollars with gold. And at the latest, 1971, we've been easing into it since the 30s. But at the latest, 1971, since then, we have been in this bizarro world. We're trying to treat liabilities as if they are assets. We're trying to treat promises to pay as if they were payments. And I think that the insanity behind the whole system, the irrationality, is a consequence of our willingness to embrace an insane form of currency. And it's now catching up with us. There's a kind of momentum in these things, apparently, where just because you do something stupid in 1971 doesn't mean that you're going to see the adverse consequences necessarily in 1972. They put a system together of petrodollars to replace asset-based dollars, and it's worked for a while. But it inevitably had to fail. And as it does, what are we going to do? What's next? I mean, I would guess that the central bankers are running scared right now. When they have their private moments, when they sit down and talk to each other, they've got to say, oh my God, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? How much longer can we hold this together? And what do we do when it breaks down? I don't know. I have no idea, and I don't think they do either. We're in a situation where people are not in control. They can react to things. Things will happen, and people in positions of power will react to them, and perhaps they'll do something sensible, and perhaps they'll do something stupid. But I don't think they're in control anymore. You know, control kind of... It's not just an ability to react to circumstances, it's an ability to make circumstances. They can react, but I don't think they can control and blah, blah, blah. Again, Morgan Stanley, they're saying it's a bizarre world. It's bizarre. It doesn't make sense. It's irrational. I agree with that. And again, why is it irrational? And it's not just irrational here in the United States. It's irrational in Japan, it's irrational in Europe, it's irrational in China. There is a central irrationality in the entire global economy. I think it's the fiat money system. Some of you might think it's something else. But what is the common denominator that goes from Japan to the United States to Europe to China? Where's the common denominator? I think it's fiat currency. I think it's a debt-based monetary system. I think those are the common denominators, and we need to discover what those common denominators are so we can search and find out what is the fundamental cause for the madness that's afflicting our economies right now. If we knew, or if we were willing to admit what that madness was, we might be able to correct the situation. But as long as the central banks are determined to maintain fiat currency and debt-based monetary system, they're not going to admit there's anything wrong there. Little boy might say, hey, the emperor is running around butt naked, and the central banks will say, no, he's not. He's still got the finest invisible cape the world has ever seen. Well, truth is, we can't see it anymore. But they're not going to admit it. So what do you do? People in positions of power, in my opinion, have not only lost control, but they're lying. How do you protect yourself? I don't think it's by buying their lies. I don't think it's by placing your faith in a debt-based monetary system. I don't think it's in placing your wealth in the form of paper debt instruments. The whole thing is crazy. And if you stop and look at it and think about it, all of a sudden you become one of those little boys who says, hey, that guy's running around in the nude. What's going on here? What's wrong with the emperor? Once you see it, you have to change your own behavior. You have to change your own way of thinking about things and your own perspective. And you begin to realize, I got to put my wealth into something tangible that I can hold, rather than in a piece of paper, which is inevitably nothing but a promise to pay. That's all the paper debt instruments are. Somebody's promising to pay. It's just like liar loans. Coming into 2007, 2008, the Great Recession, they were one of the precipitants. Banks were handing out money. Anybody come in the doors, oh, yeah, I promise to pay. Yeah. I got a job. I'm making $100,000 a year. I can afford to take out a loan for $250,000 or whatever. And the banks were just saying, fine, here, take the money, get out of here. They didn't bother to verify. The promises couldn't be kept. Eventually, there were so many of these promises that couldn't be kept and weren't kept that it very nearly collapsed the global economy. It's the difference between a payment and a promise to pay. Paper. All of the paper debt instruments are promises to pay. But there's so many promises out there, they can't all be kept. And most of those promises, sooner or later, are going to be broken. And if you've got your wealth stored in a form of paper promises to pay, guess what? You know, you're going to lose your assets. That's what's going to happen here. So, I mean, I don't know, there may be more than one way to skin this cat, but more than one way to protect yourself, but certainly one of the best ways is move your wealth into something tangible like gold or silver. This thing's going down. It cannot, it's a house of promises. Not even as substantial as a house of cards. It's a house of promises. Promises to pay. Promises can't be kept. And it's interesting that despite all of the best efforts of Japan, for example, and the European Union to deal with fundamental economic problems, they aren't able to do so. And if they can't, for sure, the promises can't be kept. How can you squeeze money out, get money out if somebody doesn't have a job anymore? Or a corporation whose factory is no longer producing, it's only producing 70% of what it did in the past. Are they available to help pay off the debts? We go into this, you know, state of recession, state of depression. However bad it was before we got here, once you're in that state of recession, state of depression, it's even worse. Who can pay the debt? Well, you want to save your money, you want to save your wealth, you're going to have to find a medium with which you can save that wealth that is not a promise to pay. Let's take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be back in about 2.5 minutes. Please stay tuned.
PSA count high? Half of all men over 50 have an enlarged prostate. You can shrink your prostate without harmful drugs or risky surgery. The secret to healing the prostate is to cleanse the prostate and the liver. Call Apothecary Herbs to ask about the Prostate Kit for a comprehensive way to heal and soothe your prostate. Educate yourself on how easy it can be to disinfect, cleanse, and restore your prostate gland. Call Apothecary Herbs for the Prostate Kit and successfully reduce swelling, inflammation, dissolve stones, and cleanse the blood to obtain the results you need. Money-back guarantee with every purchase. Call the experts in organ cleansing. Call Apothecary Herbs now for the Prostate Kit and empower yourself. Toll free 866-229-3663 for international callers 704-875-8010. That's toll free 866-229-3663 or visit the web at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, I have this great coin, one of my favorite coins. I think people who listen to this program over the years and the clients who talk to me is the $10 Indian gold piece. The Mint State 63 $10 Indian gold piece is trading, I mean, at such a low price at this point in time compared to a Mint State 61. Usually you'll have $300, $400, $500 spreads between these two coins. You're looking at a $75 spread. It's a great time to be buying some Mint State 63 $10 Indian gold pieces. It's a great way to upgrade your portfolio, get some a little bit better quality coins if you're just holding bullion in your portfolio. The Mint State 63 $10 Indian gold piece, we're going to include shipping cost on this, and we're also going to include a 1 ounce American silver eagle. So it's really a great price at $870. So you get free shipping. You get a 1 ounce American Silver Eagle, a Mint State 63 $10 Indian gold piece, all for the low price of $870. And what's really nice when you have a lot of volatility in the markets is these fractional pieces. You know, you can have gold move up $20 or $30. You can have it move down $20 or $30. They actually perform better when it's going up, but if you have a big drop for a temporary period of time, they don't react as much. But when that demand picks up, then they certainly do outpace the price of what spot will do. So it's a great time to be picking these up for $870.
Okay, we've got a caller, Joe from Arkansas. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Al and Melody. Yeah, hi. I wanted to make a comment on what I think is this fundamental madness of the economy, and that's this, that, okay, the people with the most influence in the economy, especially the most influence on government policy, is the banks, the bankers. And they pretend, they appear to be benevolent, altruistic people that just are concerned about everybody's economic good and about good policy for everybody. But, of course, in reality, they're business interests. They've got their own business to take care of, which is their banking. And in reality, what they're concerned about is what's the best interests of their particular business, which is banking. And banking makes its money from loaning money and collecting interest on loans. And so their interest is to get everybody in as much debt as possible so that they make the most money as possible from making the loans. And so their interest is to get the government, you know, to spend beyond their means, you know, to get hugely in debt for things like social welfare spending that they can't afford, or to get involved in very expensive wars on foreign soil that they can't possibly afford, and so as to run up the debt so that the bankers make a lot of money from the loans they make to the government. And, of course, it's the same with everybody else. You know, of course, the banks make money not, of course, loaning money to the government would be the most lucrative business, but they loan money to everybody else, too. And so their interest would be to give everybody advice whereby, you know, they get in debt to the banks, whereby they live and spend beyond their means, you know, so that they go in debt to the banks, supposedly, you know, because it's going to be good for them or good for the economy or something like that, but in reality, because it's good for the bankers. And at some point, you know, of course, the debt has to go. And so their interest is to make it impossible for people to earn enough money to make ends meet so that they have to go and loan and get a loan so that they can keep going in their business, their personal life, and their government or whatever.
I think there's some truth in what you're saying, Joe. And I think especially in the past, for example, you know, there's stories that bankers essentially funded both sides of the Civil War just to put the government so deep into debt that when the Civil War was over, I'm not sure that we ever paid that debt off. But the bankers have been much maligned. All right, they've been seen as a villain for a considerable period of time by people who care to look at such things. But I think lately, I'm not sure that the bankers are the villains that many of us imagine them to be. And the reason is, how much money can they make when the Federal Reserve declares the interest rate to be, the basic interest rate to be 0.25%, now raised up to 0.5%? The banks are the ones that are taking it. I mean, they're taking a serious beating out of this. In one of the articles we read from earlier today, talking about the Bank of Japan launches negative interest rates. Part of that article says negative interest rates could push down bank operating profits by 8 to 15%, according to Standard & Poor's. When one of the things that surprised me, and I just learned this in the last week or 10 days for the first time that I saw it and I understood, we talk about negative interest rates, who are they going to apply to? They first and foremost apply to American banks who are depositing their funds with the Federal Reserve. And if they impose negative interest rates, it's the banks that are being charged. They're the ones that are paying. They're the first victims of negative interest rates. And they have to have been victims of this near zero interest rate that we've had for the past 6-8 years. They can't make the profits they looked for in the past and they expected in the past. And so we started out in 2008 with a big reaction. Oh, my gosh, the Federal Reserve is helping their banker buddies. And they did. Gave them billions and billions of dollars. But since then, with zero interest rates, their banker buddies have been taking a real beating. So it's not clear who is the real villain here. I think we can say the central banks are for sure. But it's not clear that the balance of the banks are as bad. I'm not here to defend them per se. I'm not here to tell you that bankers are, you know, the banking system is a good situation and the rest of that. But I am saying they have been victimized by this near zero interest rate. They can't charge maybe even enough to get to collect, beat inflation. They've been losing money. So I'm not convinced that right now, I don't doubt the bankers have been hustling and conning and exploiting people in the past. I don't doubt that given the opportunity, they'd do it again. But the central reserve, or the central banks, the Federal Reserve, by imposing near zero interest rates and even at least considering negative interest rates right now, first victim of those rates will be the banks, you know, the Wall Street banks. And we had an article from, I don't remember which one of the Wall Street banks it was, It was Deutsche Bank. It wasn't Wall Street. It was Deutsche Bank. They were complaining to the European Central Union to say, my God, you're destroying us. They're being ruined by negative interest rates in Europe. And you've probably seen reports that Deutsche Bank is on the edge of some sort of a collapse, maybe bankruptcy. Some people think it'll be bigger than Lehman Brothers. They think it just as Lehman Brothers was deemed the spark plug that very nearly collapsed the economies in the Great Recession 2008 and there. They think Deutsche Bank is going to be an even bigger problem, and they think it's on the verge of that collapse now. That bankruptcy may be in the immediate future, you know, a couple of months, a couple of weeks, who knows, I don't know, a couple of quarters. But they don't think Deutsche Bank can make it, and Deutsche Bank was expressly complaining the European Central Bank and said, look, you're destroying us with these negative interest rates. We can't survive. So it's very difficult to decide who the major villains are right now. And we may even wonder, to what extent do we even have villains, or do we just have desperate people who've inherited offices from villains, and now they're there and they're trying to hold things together as best they can. It might be, I'm not here to argue in favor of them and the rest of it. I'm not arguing they're good people, but it may be that they're in such desperate circumstances that they're not even trying to exploit. They're just trying to survive. Does that make any sense to you, Joe?
At the lower levels, yeah, but I think somewhere there must be real villains. You know, I think somewhere at the higher levels.
I agree. Up at the top, up at the very top, it's at the level of the Federal Reserve or the central banks, at least, or whoever is above them and telling them what to do.
The root of the whole problem goes back to what we had talked about earlier, was the fiat currency. That allowed governments to grow, that allowed the banking systems to grow, that allowed every one of these top-tier people to become wealthier, more powerful, all on the backs of the American people and people around the world. And they're going to continue to rob, rape, steal every single penny that they can get. They're not any sort of, and you're right, maybe on a lower tier, your little credit union, and yeah, they're not, you know. But, you know, we're talking about too big to fail banks. We're talking about the central banks. We're talking about the governments of this world. And yeah, you can look at it. You can either tag it as either a design. You can either tag that it's been designed to do this way. You could either tag it as, it's just a symptom of the fiat currency. But that fiat currency has allowed this to all come to where we are today. But they have, you know, so now there are a lot of villains at the top.
I just saw a graphic presentation of the fall of Rome in relationship to the denarius, the silver coin that Rome used for most of its history. They used it and then they started to degrade it. And they started producing coins that were no longer pure silver, but 70% silver. And then 50%, and then 25%. And they were producing coins that were mostly brass, but they had a little silver skin on the outside of them. But that silver skin quickly wore away, and people could see they were just getting a chunk of brass. There's an argument to be made that at least a fundamental reason for the fall of Rome was that they debased their currency. And this is an interesting argument because it implies that the people figure it out, that this is not brain surgery, that somehow or another even ordinary people begin to understand when their currency is being degraded. And when they understand that, they begin to change in ways where you can offer them 100,000 denarius and it doesn't matter to them very much. The economy begins to stagnate. The nation begins to stagnate. And maybe at least one of the causes, and maybe the fundamental cause of the fall of Rome, was they debased their currency. And if that were true, And so I'm saying, if that were true, then we can expect something similar might be happening in this country. We've been debasing the dollar for longer than I've been alive. A little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And the people in positions of power think that's the way somehow they're going to strengthen the economy or strengthen at least government powers. And if Rome is any indication, maybe it's the way you collapse an entire society, debase the currency. And I'm not the first one to make that suggestion. There are other people who've said it other ways. I'm trying to remember who said the fastest way, was it Marx? The fastest way to cause a national destruction is to debase the currency. Well, we're doing that. We've been doing it throughout my lifetime, and maybe it's finally catching up with us. What do you think, Joe?
Well, I once read a terrific economics book called Unforgiven by Charles Walter Jr. I think I learned more from this book than any other economics book I've ever read. And I think it had a brilliant insight there when he said that the economy is basically productive working people trading with each other.
Yeah.
And so as long as productive working people are making enough wealth and getting paid enough for what they produce to trade with each other, you'll have a good economy. But we don't have a good economy, basically, I think, because one of several reasons. For some reason, the productive work, there's plenty of wealth being produced, I believe, but for some reason, the productive working people don't have enough money to trade with each other. And it could be for several reasons. It could be that their wages are too low. It could be that the government's taxing so much away from them that they haven't got money to spend with other working people. It could be that they're so much in debt that most of the money that they make goes to debt service, to servicing their debt. And so they don't have any money left over to buy stuff from other working people. You know, I think it's basically a combination of those things. And so the way to get a good economy back would be, and of course it's to the interest of the bankers, you know, not to let the productive working people make enough money from their production that they can trade with each other without going into debt, because the bankers want the people to go into debt. And also in the government, of course, the government is so ambitious to grow and have more power that it taxes people as much as it possibly can get away with, you know, so that, again, they don't have money to spend with each other, so that the economy isn't so good. And
Joe, we're going to have to leave it at that because we are out of time. I want to thank you for your call and thank you for your contribution. Melody and I are going to disappear here and be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank, the producer, and Joe from Arkansas. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.